I think it's very obvious that the apartheid system was highly inspired by Nazism, and I think that's where our culture, sorry, our background, our history interacts, or that's where it shares commonalities. And we have our own experiences, as we've been keep mentioning, but we also have our own opinions on these issues. In the context of South Africa, I mean, of course, I represent those who were oppressed. And then in German history, of course, then you have Jews and the nation and Germans. You do have your own reflection, which is something that is important to have conversation around, on the issue of how did you, or maybe I think Germany is also still dealing with this issue. After the fall of Nazism, how did, I mean, German deal with the projects now of coexisting with those who were once, oppressed and disadvantaged? How do you think that worked? And maybe later I talk about how did or how does, because I think it's an ongoing project in the South African context, how are we dealing with the situation of finding each other and live together peacefully? How do you think that project, well, would you say, I mean, I think I would ask you the same way you asked me, do I feel free? Do you feel that that project was done and dusted, it was a success? There is a very good reconciliation and understanding amongst those who were oppressed and those who oppressed.
Well, that's a very big question. And of course, like the difference between those two historical events is that, like, I haven't actually lived in the time that there was still the World War going on, you know? I mean, it's
Sure.
like, yeah,
Years
a lot
ago.
of years ago, lots
Sure.
of years ago. And so, like, I can only, try to imagine in a way, you know? But I mean, it's a fact that a lot of people who were like targeted in that time by the Nazis, they just moved out, you know? They just left the country. I mean, who could left the country, you know? I mean, it was also disabled people, yeah, not only Jews, you know? So
Sure.
yeah, so lots of people that there's like, and that's also why there's a lot of German communities around the world, because people just had to move out of Germany at some point, you know? So when you ask, how's the reconciliation going? Like
Reconciliation, yeah, with
concerning
who?
that topic, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to grapple, of course. We know we have a very recent event in the world that's going on that also shows some remainders of like sentiments that people have yeah, to each other, towards each other. Like to judge or estimate how the reconciliation went, like on that topic, hard to say. That's the honest answer. But of course, there's also that other part of the story that's also has the reconciliation between East and West Germany. I mean, that's also you know, when at the time of the Cold War and when all that went on, there was an actual war between two parts of Germany, you know? And I would say, like, in my mind, in my, well, historical memory, let's put it like that, that's more of a reconciliation that took place also more recently, right? Between people in the east and people in the west of Germany. And of course, the wall fell in 89, 1989, and yeah, people moved across. But on that topic, today, if you ask me, is Germany reconciled? You know, does everyone have the same chances? I say, well,
Yeah.
Let's have a closer look.
Interesting that you bring the West and East Germany part. Of course, because I'm doing my student life in the former eastern part, and at some point we had to deal with the question of how do we get students that come to Germany, particularly on the eastern part, to study. How do we get them to finish their studies here and work here? Because the trend that the government is observing is that people come, but they don't stay. So they study here and then they move to other cities, bigger cities, of course, Berlin and others. And on the issue of opportunities now, the question is, there are opportunities on the eastern part, but people don't want to stay there. But there are enough opportunities. The issue is that, even people from these communities, because when we delve deeper into the question, we came to understand that not only international students come to eastern parts of Germany to study, leave these parts after their studies, but also locals. So if people from Leipzig or Eva or in Erfurt or Thuringen who were born there and all of that, they finish their studies and they leave their home province. Why is that? Of course, I'm saying it to highlight the issue of opportunities that, well, in my understanding is that like, issue is not necessarily opportunities that, my understanding is that people don't leave eastern part because of opportunities, but they leave it for other reasons, because there are opportunities, because of issues that, I was just mentioning. Could it be the issue of former Eastern Germany sentiment still very strong in these communities, and maybe you are having younger people who have different perspectives in life, and they're saying, okay, well, I don't want to be part of this community, I'd rather go into more, I don't know, progressive and communities.
Well, of course, for myself, I've never lived in the former eastern part of Germany, let's put it like that. But I've made my experiences in those parts, let's put it like that. And if you look at the political landscape, especially in Germany, you also find that a lot of, the biggest right wing party in Germany is very successful in the eastern parts of Germany. That's actually where they grew.
Yeah, sure.
I think that does play a role. It does play a big role. Like, what's the character of the places that we stay? You know, do we want to be part of? This movement I think the political landscape does play a role, even in the cities like Leipzig and Dresden, because there's also protests from the right wing party, the AfD, going on, and they're very strong there, so I do think that definitely plays a role. Otherwise, though, it is, I would say, like, the eastern part of Germany is infrastructurally, still, like, there's some things to catch up with, and of course that's the remainder of the history, because like if you do things a certain way for a long time and then you change everything,
it takes time,
everything will change right away, right? So
interesting. And the history of the fall of Berlin Wall happened a few years before apartheid. So we are more or less on the same age on that part, and maybe 30 years is not a big time to fix some of these things, but some things are too basic to take over 30 years to be fixed. Talking about South Africa, of course, I think 30 years is enough to get everyone with water and to get everyone with this. I mean, of course, there are other issues that are more deeper than that, because when you talk about apartheid, you talk about years and years, and you talk about colonialism, which happened before that. But I can ask this question in this in a different year, because sometimes people say, "Oh, you South Africans with this apartheid excuse, you know," and you really don't know if 30 years is enough or not. But in German context, from 1989 or whatever, around that, right, the Berlin Wall, so that is like 35, somewhere there. Those changes that you say you can still identify in the eastern part, do you think you have had enough time to try to catch up? And also the community, not the community, but also the projects around nation building, because when you talk about nation building, you're talking about having all of us driven around the same vision and same goal. Do you think whoever was entrusted with the responsibility to facilitate those projects, which is government, of course, is 35 years a fair enough time for them to deliver radical changes, like very tangible stuff, deliveries? Do you think is a fair time?
My question is it solely the responsibility of government? I mean, I think, of course, like for me, as I said, connection of human beings is always a good thing, you know, so coming together as the two formerly separated parts of Germany is also, you know, classified as a positive thing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but like, is it enough or is it not enough? Like, what does it do to the people who are living there, is the question. How do they handle this? Do they feel like they're treated in the same way? You know, I mean, I think there's also still a bigger gap between the payment of wages in the east and the west of Germany today.
You
know? So you can see it like in numbers, black on white, written like that. Is 35 years enough? If you look at the numbers, it's definitely not enough, you know?
Yeah, sure.
If you ask people who live there, it's going to be a very interesting experience to hear what they say. But like, yeah, I don't think it's about the years. It's about like what's being done and how does maybe government take people along, you know? Yeah, or is it even the responsibility of government, or is it not also in the people's hands of both sides of the wall to, you know, take each other by the hands and say, let's go together instead of having this separate way still.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, you're right that I'd say it's surely a government's responsibility, but not government alone, for sure. I think there are other pockets of society that also need to play a role. But I think someone who should really take a lead, it's got to be a government. But it's complex, of course, as you say. It's also a question of heritage, you know, to some people. I mean, how much does it take to pull people into one direction? Because it's a serious work. I get that. And some basic issues have been dealt with, at least. I mean, there is no wall to start with. The question would be, in South Africa, do we still have a wall, you know? Well, there was never a physical wall, but there was always a wall. How far have we, you know, dismantled that? And should it take 35 years or not, and to do the, or 30 years and that? Yeah, it's a big question. And I think it's one of those questions that we need that deserve their own episode, and we delve into them with full attention and all time. But one thing that is also interesting about, as I've said earlier, about South Africa's democracy, I think I'm very confident about how elections have been run from time to time. But I also just want to know, in Germany, how is that done? How is that project handled? Do you have so much hype and noise, rallies, t-shirts, food parcels, and how do you have election fever? When is election time? Do you feel it? I know there's gonna be election this year. I've been walking around, I'm like, when I'm gonna see posters of these people, and then I can get to know more and all of that, recognize faces and all. Do you have that? How is the culture? But then we can also just talk about how free is politics itself. But let us start with the artificial stuff, the culture and all of that.
Well, I mean, this year's Europe election, not local, not regional, but Europe.
Uh-huh.
And I can definitely say, like, for me, there was never any election fever in my life.
Yeah.
I didn't see it with others, and I didn't feel it for myself.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I grew up in a democracy that was there already.
Yeah, sure.
Like, when I was 2, then the wall fell, and that's it, you know?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Germany, for me, was always a democracy. There was always a chancellor heading the country.
Yeah.
And, I was looking forward to being able to vote when I first could vote.
Uh-huh.
But there's no... I mean, you know, I know now how it is in South Africa, and that's only why I see, it's very different, you know?
Yeah. You always,
I always thought this is the way.
This is how it should be, yeah.
So it's very calm, you know, you do see pictures of, politicians that you can vote for, obviously, by the side of the road, but, there's local election events, and you can attend if you want to. But I must also be honest, like in Germany, I was never part of this, you know? I was never part of like an event to listen to politicians
speaking,
his policy is about, what he wants to realize. So for me, it was very much digitally available. Like, I researched information. I even, we have something called Wahl-O-Mat. You can basically put in your opinions about things, and at the end you get a result, which party is representing you mostly. Read up on which part they represent and which others they don't. It's very interesting, and it's, I perceive it as something important to do.
Yeah, sure.
Going to vote.
Yeah, sure.
But that's voting for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it now here as we are 1 month ahead of the next election.
Yeah.
It's very different.
It's very different. There's so much energy. There's a lot of... the atmosphere is telling you that something is gonna happen here. Yeah, that's very different. And you have this thing of every elections you're gonna have new parties. Of course, we are a multi-party democracy, so it's within their constitutional rights to do so. But you also have people who say, "Well, should it be like this?" What is the setup in Germany? Do you have like big five? Do you have this long list of parties? You have 300 registered, if I'm correct, in South Africa. Of course, some they contest provincially and others contest nationally. But I don't think that in any province. I doubt that you have a list that has, you have a ballot paper that has a list of less than 30, you know. Is that the same, or you just have like five, six big players and that's it in Germany? How is the complexity of multi-party landscape?
There's a lot of different parties.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, you know, you can see that you always recognize the winning parties, but we have a lot of coalitions as well. Like there's, I think it's less and less like that, that people, you know, I mean, or a city elects like only one party to be the ruling party.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it in some places. But in many places, we have just coalitions making up the government.
So
people from Social Democrats together with the Green Party, or even, you know, the Christian Democrats, you call it, I think.
Yeah.
Together with the Social Democrats or the Liberal Party. Like, those are like the parties that are, have been successful. Since I've been around.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But there is a big, big choice, you know? There's a big choice, and there's like, yeah, people fighting for or supporting for different, very different topics, really. And I mean, I like that, you know, even if I might not support one or other side,
yeah.
You know, but like, I really like that there's a big choice, and I really like the fact that there's coalition. Because you also have the situation that, I mean, it's compromising, basically. I mean, it's the basic human thing.
Yeah.
Whenever we form a relationship of whatever sort, we need to be sure, you know, I know what I want, you know what you want, and then we're going to meet somewhere to go forward together.
Yeah.
And that's very important, I think.
For sure. I think, yeah, we to people who are... anti-multi-party, I think they are just not being honest because that how life it is, as you just said, right? You can't always get what you want. We are all here sharing resources. Life is about sharing. We are sharing this land that we are all, and sometimes I want what you also want. And we always have to manage that relationship in a peaceful manner. And I think coalitions are teaching us that look, well, maybe we can't have a situation where just one man is having it all. How do we move forward without, you know, a winner taking it all, but sharing whatever that we all have? And I think that is a trend in most developed countries. And I think it's a good test for the strength of South Africa's democracy. How are they going to manage this unavoidable situation that is going to become our reality very soon, where ANC has to share. Of course, it's happening in other municipalities, but one would say those are municipalities. Of course, there are lessons from there which are quite not positive. You have a situation of power squabbles from time to time. This party takes this party out and all of that. How do we ensure sustainable coalition government? But I think, of course, it will be the first time that got to happen at the national level, and I think that will be a very good test. And if South Africa can manage that transition smoothly and sustain it, I think that will be positive development on our side. And of course, we do have other countries in the world to learn from in terms of how does this get to be done and how do we manage them better. Because I think most African countries and elections are always characterized by one party rule that suppresses others not to get their chance. And I think, we are hoping and praying that South Africa does not follow that route. It doesn't take that path.
Well, I think the thing to to round this up, it's like to see it as a part of the human experience as well for me. Because like if you're the one human tries to fight the other human because he has that opinion that he wants to push through, then we're not gonna, we're basically not gonna survive as humanity.
Yeah, sure. Know? Yeah.
So like if parties start doing that, it's the same thing. And yeah, to just view it as the only thing. Like I mean for me, it's definitely like the only thing that the world can progress. And you know, the world, every country in the world, every region, every municipality, every family, even, yeah, you know, yeah. And on the smallest level, if we don't see and listen to each other and try to see if maybe, you know, I'm listening to you, maybe you have something that's interesting for me, you know, to do in my life, and the other way around, then we're not going to progress. So we're going to stay at one point, yeah. And this is what life is about, change and progressing.
Progressive. Yeah. I think it's a very good note to round off the discussion, because you are now touching the nerve of Ubuntu, right? That's how life should be seen, that I need you and you need me, coalitions also speak to that, to say, how do we share? How do we rely on each other? How do we build together? Yeah, yeah. So, it shouldn't just be about me and me alone. And I think, yeah, that's where we are heading to. And I hope that the spirit of Ubuntu will possess everyone, and everyone will see it in that light. And All South Africans learn to appreciate and welcome the reality of our diversity. Not only our diversity in terms of culture, in terms of our race and things like that, but also diversity in terms of opinions. That we have differing opinions, but we can also become one. In that diversity, and that's what Ubuntu is about, and that's what Bread and Braai podcast is also about. We are about bridging
the cultures,
cross cultures,
food.
Yeah, through food, because food is what brings us together. So, Kathy brought bread. And as you can see, we have charcoal here. So now it's going to get busier. I'm going to get Braai starting, and then we can have good. Chats is not going to end now. It's still going to go on and on and on. But this is the beginning of something great. This is the beginning of a platform that is inviting different cultures to come and share their perspectives on their experiences.
So thank you very much for listening up to here.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much for maybe even watching us. It will be a pleasure to have you on our next episode of the Bread and Braai podcast. And let us know even in the comments on Instagram. Follow us on the Instagram channel. Leave a comment. Be our friend. Share your experience and your opinions with us. Thank you very much.
Don't forget to subscribe.